getting out of debt. D-Day. We have so much personal debt in our nation that the average person has been described as someone driving on a bond-financed highway, in a bank-financed car, fueled by charge card-financed gasoline, going to purchase furniture on the installment plan to put in his mortgage-financed home. Alan said, "I hope I never pick up another one." Gene recalled, "I just didn't know. I had no experience. What were they talking about? Poisonous reptiles, radioactive material, hard drugs? No, it was credit cards. Credit cards. The Hitchcocks had run up thousands of dollars of debt on their credit cards and were paying a very high interest rate for the privilege. This is a common problem. The easy availability of credit cards has spawned a phenomenal growth in the number of credit cards held by consumers. People hold hundreds of millions of credit cards, and the average consumer carries more than 6 cards in his wallet. At the end of the initial conference with the Hitchcocks, Alan asked for my scissors. He wanted to perform some plastic surgery. So as a symbol of their commitment to get out of debt, they cut their credit cards to ribbons. If they follow through on that commitment, unfortunately, they're going to be in the minority. Less than 50% of those who take that initial step actually follow through and become debt-free. Now, because of your circumstances, your path for getting debt-free will be unique to you. The following steps are a guide to your journey. The steps are simple, but following them, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It requires hard work. The goal is D-Day, Debtless Day, the day when you become absolutely free of debt. The first step is to pray. In 2 Kings 4, starting at verse 1, a widow was threatened with losing her children to her creditor, and she appealed to the prophet Elisha for help. Elisha instructed the widow to borrow many empty jars from her neighbors. Then the Lord supernaturally multiplied her only possession, a very small quantity of oil, and as a result, all the jars were filled to the brim. She sold the oil, paid her debts to free her children. You know, the same God who provided for the widow is interested in you becoming free of debt. The first step is the most important. Pray. Ask for the Lord's help in your journey toward debtless day. He might act immediately, as in the case of the widow, or more slowly over time. In either case, prayer is essential. I've observed a trend. As people begin to eliminate debt and accelerate the debt repayment, the Lord blesses their faithfulness. So even if you can afford only a small monthly repayment to reduce your debt, please do it. The Lord can multiply your efforts. Well, the second step is to establish a budget. Now, in my experience, few people in debt are actually using a written budget. They may have one that's neatly filed away in a drawer, but they haven't been using it. A budget helps you plan ahead and helps you analyze your spending patterns to see where you can cut back. It also helps you bridle impulse spending. The third step is to make a list of every possession you own, your home, your car, your furniture, anything you own. Then evaluate the list to determine whether you should sell anything. As we began to consider the items the Hitchcocks might sell, the most obvious one was their new second car. Gene protested, "I can't do without the car, Alan." And Alan looked hurt. He didn't want to deprive his wife of anything that she wanted, but they both realized drastic action was needed. So by deciding to sell the car and Alan's gun collection, the Hitchcocks cut their debt and began to use the amount of the car payment to reduce some of their other debts. There's a very important lesson in what they did. They had to change their perspective. As author George Fouché has said, your attitude towards things will determine your success in working your way out of debt. Don't think about how much you're going to lose or what you paid for the item you're selling. Think about how much you'll gain, which can be applied to your debt reduction. The fourth step is to list everything you owe. You know, most people don't know exactly what they owe, so list your debts to get an accurate picture. The fifth step, and this is a key one, is to snowball your way out of debt, and here's how you do it. Start by paying off your credit cards first because they usually carry the highest rate of interest. Now, in addition to making the minimum payments on all your credit cards, Focus on paying off the one with the smallest balance first. You'll be encouraged to see the balance go down, 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 and finally disappear. After the first credit card is paid off, apply its payment toward the one with the next smallest balance. And after the second card is paid off, apply what you're paying on the first and second toward the one with the third smallest balance. That's the snowball in action. And when you're on a roll like this, it starts getting exciting. Those huge balances that have worried you and robbed you of your sleep and peace will begin diminishing before your very eyes. And then after you finish paying off your plastic, your credit cards, you apply the same snowball concept to the rest of your debts. Start with the one that has the smallest balance and just snowball away. Now, unfortunately, many people hold jobs that simply don't produce enough income to make ends meet and to pay off the debts, even if they spend really wisely. They need to earn additional income. Jean Hitchcock proved to be a very creative person. She started a mini nursery in her home, babysitting four children from her neighborhood during the day while the children's parents worked. The two older Hitchcock children were also encouraged to babysit in the evenings, and they decided to contribute half of their earnings to the family's debt reduction. These are only some of the thousands of imaginative ways to earn additional income to get out of debt more quickly. However, no matter how much additional debt you earn, the key is to make a commitment. A commitment that says the extra money that we earn is going to be applied to debt reduction and not a higher level of spending. Well, the fourth step is to accumulate no new debt. And the only way I know to accumulate no additional debt is to pay for everything with cash. With cash, a check, or a debit card at the time of the purchase. And this raises the issue of credit cards. Now, I don't believe credit cards are sinful, but they're dangerous. Statistics show that people spend about 1/3 more when they use credit cards rather than cash because they feel like they're not really spending money. It's just plastic. As one shopper said to another, "I like credit cards a whole lot more than money because they go so much further." Well, when Bev and I began this study, we had 9 credit cards. Today we carry 2. And when I analyze the financial situation of people in debt, I use a very simple rule of thumb that helps me determine whether credit cards are too dangerous for them. If they don't pay the entire balance due at the end of the month, I encourage them to perform plastic surgery, and any good scissors will do. Next, be content with what you have. This is huge. We live in a culture whose advertising industry has devised powerful, sophisticated methods geared to persuading us to buy, buy, and buy. And frequently the message is intended to create discontentment with what we already have. Let me give you an example. An American company opened a plant in Central America because the labor was plentiful and inexpensive. The opening of the plant proceeded really smoothly until the workers at the plant received their first paychecks. The next day, none of the villagers reported to work. Management waited. 1, 2, 3 days, still no villagers came to work. Finally, the plant manager went to see the village chief to talk about the problem. The chief responded, "Why should we work? We've already earned all the money we need to live on." The plant stood idle for 2 months until somebody came up with a bright idea of sending a mail order catalog to every villager. Reading the catalogs created new desires for the villagers. Soon they returned to work, and there's never been an employment problem since then. The 9th step in getting out of debt is to consider a radical change in your lifestyle. I have an observation. A growing number of people have lowered their expenses significantly to get out of debt more quickly. Some have sold their homes and moved to smaller ones or rented apartments or even moved in with family members. Many have sold automobiles with large monthly payments and have purchased inexpensive used cars for cash. They've temporarily lowered their cost of living to become free of debt. Well, the last step's the hardest. Do not give up. Recognizing from the beginning there will be 100 reasons why you should quit or delay your efforts to get out of debt. Don't give in to the temptation of not following through on your commitment. Don't stop. Don't stop until you've reached that fantastic goal of debt-free living. Remember, getting out of debt is just plain hard work, but the freedom is worth the struggle. Well, let's take a look at several common types of debt. How do we escape the auto debt trap? Car debt is one of the leading causes of consumer debt. About 70% of all the cars in our country are financed. The average person keeps a car between 3 and 4 years. The average car lasts at least 10 years. So here's how you can escape the auto debt trap. First, decide in advance to keep your car for at least 3 years after you pay off the loan. Second, pay off your loan, but continue making the monthly payments, but to yourself, into your own savings account. And then lastly, when you're ready to replace your car, the cash that you save plus the trade-in should be sufficient to buy a good, low-mileage used car, listen to these words, without going into debt. Now, let's talk about the home mortgage. And I want to challenge you. I want to challenge you to seek the Lord's direction concerning your home mortgage if you own a home. Is it possible that the Lord may want you to pay off everything you owe, including your mortgage? Now, usually this is a very long-term goal because of the size of the average mortgage. But when Bev and I began to explore what God wanted for us in this area of debt, we sensed we were to pay off everything, including the mortgage. And frankly, this was an unrealistic goal for us at the time. But we realized if we could pay it off soon, we'd save a boatload on interest payments, and it would eliminate our single largest expense. So we began to pay an extra amount each and every month that just went to pay down the principal. Now, if you start prepaying your mortgage, let your lender know what you're planning on doing. Ask them for the way that they want it done so you'll be sure that the extra payment will be credited toward principal reduction. And for Bev and me, this turned out to be an exciting time for us as we began to pay off our mortgage. The Lord occasionally provided additional funds in unexpected ways, and today we don't owe anyone anything. Eliminating debt allowed me to take time off from my work and study and to develop the Compass materials. And our living costs are so much more modest now because we don't have those debts or house payments. Well, I'm often asked if we should borrow money to make an investment. Now, I believe it's permissible, but only if you're not personally required to guarantee the repayment of the debt. The investment for which you borrow and any money investment should be the sole collateral for the debt. As our country has recently experienced, there are financial events over which we have no control. And it's painful to lose your investment, but it's much more serious to jeopardize meeting your needs by risking all your assets on investment debt. Now, this position may appear to be too conservative. However, I've walked closely with people who've lost everything simply because they guaranteed debts on investments that went sour. I also want to encourage you to pray about becoming debt-free in your business and in your church. Many are beginning to pay off all business-related debts, and thousands of churches are working toward becoming debt-free. Now let's take a look at our debt repayment responsibilities. I know some people who delay paying their bills and debts as long as possible in order to use the creditor's money as long as possible, but this isn't biblical. Proverbs 3 verse 27 says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, 'Go and come back tomorrow, and then I will give it,' when you have it with you." Godly people should pay their bills and debts as promptly as they can. Bev and I have a policy. We try to pay each bill the same day we receive it to demonstrate to others that knowing Jesus Christ has made us financially responsible. Well, here's a question often asked. Should you use all your savings to pay off debt? Well, in my opinion, it's not wise to deplete all your savings to pay off your debt. Maintain a reasonable level of saving to provide for the unexpected. If you apply all your savings against the debt and then the emergency happens, you'll probably be forced to use debt to fund the emergency, and that can be so discouraging. Also, let's take a look at bankruptcy. This is a hard issue for so many people. In bankruptcy, a court declares a person unable to pay his bills And depending upon the type of bankruptcy, the court will either allow the debtor to develop a plan to repay his creditors, or the court will distribute his property among the creditors as payment for the debt. You know, an epidemic of bankruptcy has swept our nation. Should a godly person declare bankruptcy? And the answer is generally no. Psalm 37:21 tells us, "The wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives." However, in my opinion, bankruptcy is permissible under two circumstances. A creditor forces a person into bankruptcy, or a counselor believes the debtor's emotional health is at stake because of the inability to cope with the pressure of creditors. Let me give you an example. Assume a husband deserts his wife and children. He leaves her with business and family debts for which she's responsible, and she may not have the resources or income to meet those obligations. The emotional trauma that she's experiencing of an unwanted divorce, coupled with harassment from unsympathetic creditors, just may be too much for her. Now, after a person goes through bankruptcy, I believe he should seek counsel from a lawyer to determine if it's legally permissible to repay the debt, even though he's not obligated to do so. And if it is allowable, he should make every effort to repay the debt. Now, for a large debt, this may be a long-term goal that's largely dependent upon the Lord supernaturally providing the resources. Well, let's talk about something that relates to debt. It's called co-signing. A person who co-signs becomes legally responsible for the debt of another. It's just as if you went to the bank, borrowed the money, and gave it to your friend or relative who's asking you to co-sign. A study by the Federal Trade Commission found that 50% of those who co-signed for bank loans ended up making the payments. And 75% of those who co-signed for finance company loans, you guessed it, end up making the payments. Unfortunately, there are few co-signers who plan for default. The casualty rate is so high because the professional lender has analyzed the loan and said to himself, "I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole unless I can get somebody who's financially responsible to guarantee this loan." Well, fortunately, Scripture speaks clearly about co-signing. Proverbs 17:18 says, "It is poor judgment to co-sign another's note to become responsible for his debts." And the words "poor judgment" are better translated "destitute of mind." I think the Bible's clear on co-signing. Well, parents often co-sign for their children's first automobile, but we decided not to do this. We wanted to model for our kids the importance of not co-signing, and we also wanted to discourage them from using debt. Instead, we trained them to plan ahead, save for the cash purchase of their car, and then we matched part of what they saved. So I want to urge you, use sound judgment. Never co-sign a note or become surety for any debt. Now, if you have co-signed, the Bible gives you very direct counsel. Proverbs 6 verse 5 reads, "Son, if you endorse a note for someone you hardly know, guaranteeing his debt, you are in serious trouble. You may have trapped yourself by your agreement. Quick, get out of it if you possibly can. Swallow your pride. Don't let embarrassment stand in the way. Go beg to have your name erased. Don't put it off. If you can get out of this trap, you have saved yourself like a deer that escapes from the hunter or a bird from the fowler." Well, there you have it. I pray that you make every effort to get out and stay out of debt so you won't be servant to any lender.